He invites me back to his parents' house, which I didn't think anything about at the time.
With a little luck, we might just get stuck. Let's get a little mud on the tires.
You really can't assess a man's character from his behavior at a wedding.
This secret's safe to tell because my son's in Colorado and he doesn't know about it.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Stoop Storytelling Series podcast. I'm Jessica Hankin.
And I'm Laura Wexler.
This week on the podcast, four stories about women who have first dates that start off strong and then go south, like so many dates do.
Especially. Like so many things just in general.
So we have flat first date stories. This first one is from Aselika Smith, who takes care of the Stoop's website and does a lot of our graphics and is an amazing person, an amazing mom, and an amazing Renaissance woman. And in this situation, she did not meet her match.
That's right. Take a listen.
The second job that I ever got when I moved to Baltimore was as a university admissions counselor. I was at the time, like in my mid-20s, and it was like this new exciting thing. When you're an admissions counselor, you get to travel to different places. You get to meet a lot of new people. This was my second like professional position. So like I felt like very grown up and special. And I was, you know, like really excited about this job. And one of the perks as an admissions counselor is that you get to go to school at a heavily discounted rate. So I was like, oh, grad school, perfect. I start taking classes on campus and I encounter another student, a guy who I thought was really cute. And it's probably saying a lot. I don't remember very much about like his personality or like what, you know, when we met, like what our interaction was. But I was like, he's cute. He had glasses and this like salt and pepper beard. And I was like into it and he was flirting. And so we decided to go on a date. I go on a date with this guy. Now, I'm in my mid-20s. He invites me back to his parents' house, which I didn't think anything about at the time. I'm not someone who, like, requires, like, super fancy dinner or something very expensive. I can chill and chat with anybody anywhere. So I didn't think a lot about it. We go to his house. And, again, I don't remember a whole lot, but it was not special. It was, you know, mid at best. I was not like really feeling the conversation. I wasn't having a good time. And at some point, he wants me to like go upstairs and sit on his bed. Sir, we are not doing that. You know, like I'm not having a good time on the couch. We're not doing anything else. But he wasn't, like, horrible. I just, like, didn't, you know, I wasn't having a good time. So he wasn't disrespectful or rude or anything. But I ended up leaving, you know, very shortly after that. Because I was just like, you know, this is not going anywhere. I'm not having fun. And so I went home. We didn't talk anymore after that. We didn't, you know, just try to go on another date. Nothing else. We just, you know, both kind of moved on. So fast forward, like, maybe 6 or 7 years later, I'm looking to buy a house here in Baltimore. A part of the process for home buying for me was that, you know, I would find something. If I really, really liked it, I would try and talk to the neighbors to see, like, what they thought about the neighborhood, if they enjoyed it, if they liked it. And that's exactly what I did, you know, when I was looking to buy a house. So I find this one house. It's newly renovated, brand new appliances, brand new roof. And it just happened to be the cheapest house that I had looked at to that date. And so I go through my normal routine of like, you know, talking to the neighbors and seeing what they think about the neighborhood and all that sort of thing. And I encountered this really sweet older couple, super welcoming, very friendly. They like, you know, tell me about their experience. They've been in the neighborhood for like more than 30 years. You know, they're like real chill, real nice. I'm like, oh, this is great. I'm sold. Like, I definitely want this house. I end up putting in an offer and getting accepted and I move in. So I've, you know, now moved into my house that I love. And one day, like very shortly after, I'm like either leaving, maybe I was going into my house and my neighbors like wave me over. And so I go over and they end up inviting me inside. So I go in and sit down and chat for a little bit. So not very long after that, lo and behold, she calls her son to come downstairs. And who is her son but this guy that I got on a date with that I did not care for. Now, I cannot assume that I know what her intentions were. I don't want to project anything onto her. I've never spoken to her about this. But I think she was trying to set us up. So she, after she tells him to come downstairs, none the wiser, of course, she has him walk me 3 doors down the alley to my house, which it's not dark. My alley is not like it's real, you know, it's simple. It's not like a sketchy alley or anything like that. No, it's like a regular walk down the street. It's broad daylight. It's not dangerous at all. But she has him walk me down the street to my house. And we have a very awkward conversation about how, and I don't know if you remember before that, but I reminded him, like, yeah, we went out and I didn't enjoy it very much. So he, you know, we get back to my house, I go inside, and I still live in that house. I still love my neighbors, but I see him regularly now. And it's gotten to the point where it's not like, you know, it's kind of like not a thing anymore. We acknowledge one another, you know, I'll wave at him, he'll wave at me, but that's as far as it goes. And it's just like a mildly awkward interaction that I have on occasion, and that's it, and that's all.
Oh, I just love that. You know, she has to see him so often.
I know, it's hilarious.
But, you know, she doesn't hold a grudge.
Yeah, and I mean, just the fact that after a while, the most awkward things can stop being awkward after just
time.
Time.
Yeah, the gift of time.
Yes, yes. So this next story is from Amanda Sarver. So she told this at a show, and she came up from the audience, and she was really worried that she wasn't a good storyteller. And as you'll see when you listen to this, she's a natural.
So I grew up, my high school spoke 62 languages. It was very diverse. But just outside of where I went to high school were very country high schools, and we called it, it was the county, and there were lots of counties. And other context is that my dad was the football coach at the city high school, and that made dating difficult because everyone's afraid of the football coach. And so I played sports, I was in clubs, and I would meet people from the county schools, thankfully. So a lot of the guys that I dated were from the county. And I was at a bonfire one night, the summer in 2003, and I'm out in the county somewhere at a bonfire, and I meet this guy who's from one of the further counties, like not even one of the ones right around, but one of the further counties. And his name is Andy. For the purposes of this story, we'll call him Andy McCoy. And he has a very thick accent. He's from an area that has a lot of hollers, if you know what that is. And but he was charming and sweet, and he, like, formally asked me on a date, and it was very sweet. And I agreed, and I said, you know, I'd love to. And so we set a date, and then he insisted on picking me up at my house and meeting my parents. And, you know, very polite, yes, sir, no, ma'am, all of that. I'll definitely have her home by curfew. Coach Sarver, don't worry, you know. And so we get into Andy's pickup truck, which is brand new. He's very proud of it. He had been doing some farm work to earn the money to buy it. So he's very proud of it. And he wants to take me to, like, his county. So it's, I mean, like a 40-minute drive. So he's a country music fan, so we're listening to country music. And he tells me that I remind him of Kimberly Williams, who is in Father of the Bride. She's the bride. And I don't look like her, but he just thought, he just said, like, your aura, like, something about you is very Kimberly Williams. I'm like, oh, okay. And I love that movie, so thanks. And he takes me to a restaurant that, the best of my memory, I know the word rooster is in it. And it's a sweet, homey place. Everyone knows him when we go in. It's not big, but everyone knows him. His grandparents are there eating, so I meet his grandmother and his grandfather. And you know, his second cousin is the owner, and it goes on. But it's very sweet, and he's pretty traditional and gentlemanly. And then he says, you know, I think we went and got ice cream, and then, you know, I'd love to show you this cool place. It's up on the mountain, and it's just this really beautiful place, and I'd love to show it to you. I'm like, okay, great. So we kind of drive up in the pickup truck up the mountain and then back down the mountain. And there's no, I mean, this is like dirt road. There's no lights. There's no nothing. And we get kind of back down, and as we kind of turn the corner, you come into this, the headlights turn on, and it's this beautiful little lake. And it is really pretty, and it's really sweet, and he doesn't even try to kiss me. We're just talking in the truck, and it's very nice. And then he starts to say, you know, we need to get you home because I don't want the wrath of your dad, and I want to get you home by curfew. I'm like, oh, we're still okay. And then the song starts playing, and it's Brad Paisley, who's a country artist who Andy really likes. And he says to me, it's a song we haven't heard. And when I knew that I was going to tell this story, I quickly looked it up, and it was released in July of 2003. So this was July of 2003, so this has to be, like, brand new. And it's called Mud on the Tires. And one of the lyrics is, with a little luck, we might just get stuck. Let's get a little mud on the tires. And so Andy insists that we need to leave. So I say, okay, we're stuck. So here's Andy revving the engine, spinning the tires. The mud is kicking up all over the new truck, all over everything. We are not moving at all, not one bit. Our cell phones don't have service. There's no service in the middle of this mountain lake, wherever we are, 45 minutes from my parents. And Andy's kind of panicking. You can tell he's embarrassed, and he's really worried, probably too, about my dad. And so we realize the only way we can solve this really is we're gonna have to get out of the truck and walk up the mountain and try to get service. And Andy tells me his cousin owns a tow truck company, so he'll come get us and he'll tow the truck out. So we get out of the car and we're walking up the dirt road that we walked down to get there. And now we had also talked about wildlife that he sees in this area, so of course we had talked about bears. So now here we are walking in the pitch black, no service, no nothing, and I'm like, okay, I'm terrified that a bear is going to come out and eat us. And the only thing I know is, like, black bears are common in Virginia, and black bears are supposed to be loud and big and, like, scare them away. So I just start singing at the top of my lungs any song that pops in my head. I'm telling Andy he needs to sing. So we're singing, holding hands, walking up this mountain. And we get to the top. Andy calls his cousin. Sure enough, that man is there in 10 minutes to get us with that tow truck. He pulls the truck out. I call my parents. I tell them I'm going to be late. They're like, oh, likely story, you got stuck in the mud. And so we get back, and Andy comes in to apologize to my parents and say, like, oh, you can look at the truck. We honestly really got stuck, and I'm so sorry. And the chemistry wasn't really there, wasn't really a thing. Later that summer, like a month later, I've now been on two dates with a guy from a similar area. His name is Buck. And I run into Andy at the county fair. And the county fair headliner is Brad Paisley. So run into Andy. At this point, I now know that Kimberly Williams from Father of the Bride married Brad Paisley. They're married to this day. So Andy sees me at the fair. He tells me this, that they're married. And I say, you know, I've been out on a couple of dates with someone, and I kind of like him, and, you know, I just kind of want to see where it goes. And he's like, oh, well, what's his name? And I tell him, Buck Hatfield. And he's like, that's my best friend. Like, I'm really sorry. And so then Andy is mad at me and at Buck and doesn't speak to Buck for months and never speaks to me really again. Fast forward to when I'm working here in Baltimore, I go to a conference in Nashville, and I'm sitting in the conference, and the girl next to me, she's from Milwaukee, and she's like, hey, Brad Paisley just announced a pop-up music. He's going to record a music video at Tootsie's. Like, if we go now, we can get in line to, like, be in this video. So I'm like, all right, yeah. So we skip out on the end session of this conference, and we go to Tootsie's, and we wait in line, and we get into this bar, and we're in there, and he's singing this song. I don't know the song now, but it's called Bucked Up. So, like, Buck, it's bucked up. So we're in there. It's fun. Like, he buys everybody drinks. It's memorable. You can see me barely in this music video. You have to know I'm in it to see me. Well, I get a message from Andy. And he says, is that you in the Brad Paisley music video? Like, yes, it is. And he's like, I told you you were Kimberly Williams. And I said, Andy, I just want you to know that every time I hear that song, I think about you and getting stuck in the mud and how getting mud on the tires isn't that bad. So thank you for a lovely memory and a story that I got to tell tonight. So that's it.
I mean, it's just so funny, too. I love that the guy made such a, like, specific reference to who she looks like, mm-hmm. the girl from Father of the Bride.
Like, yeah, and the whole story feels like a country song. Yeah. Like, it's just form and content are married in the most elegant way in that. It was so great. And just that idea, like, her father was the football coach.
Oh,
so yeah, it's awesome. We're going to take a short break, and we'll be back with two more flat first date stories.
This next storyteller shared a story years ago. She's an audience storyteller. I don't know much about her at all. I do know that her name is Maggie Hadley, and she has a very good flat first date story. Take a listen.
My husband's going to so kill me.
Uh-oh.
He's sitting right there. This secret's safe to tell because my son's in Colorado and he doesn't know about it. And my parents are no longer with me, so they'll never know about it either. So you're the first to know, other than Dave and I and a few friends. When Dave and I, we were first dating, actually, before we started dating, I didn't like him. He wasn't my type, okay? And I thought, well, I'll go out a few times and see how it goes, and I'm a riding instructor. I teach people how to ride horses. And I thought, this would be the way to get rid of him. So I go to give a riding lesson up in Fawn Grove, PA. And at this farm, they run an electric fence out the front of the property to let the horses graze the front half. And I told him, I said, well, never had any experience with electric before, but let me open the fence, drive my truck through, because I didn't want to let the horses out. I grab the fence. I feel a stinging sensation on my back. And I'm thinking, am I being shocked? Holding the fence. And I went to reach behind me. A little to my surprise, there was a bee, and I just knocked him in my pants. And my mother says, don't ever take your pants off on the first date. And I did. Off come the pants. And I'm shaking them out, thinking that the bee is now out of my pants. It's not. Put my pants back on, he's now in my crotch, stinging me. So it goes from bad to worse. I just kind of grab my crotch and I go, bring the truck on through. Walking down there with one, you know, like this. Then there's this little calf that takes a liking to me. I have one hand in my crotch and then the other hand in this calf's mouth. Walking with it. So now you can understand why nobody in my family ever heard this story. So that's it.
Have you ever had a bee, like, in your clothing?
No.
Yeah.
You?
I have. It's a very alarming, upsetting experience, and I would not want it to happen in front of someone that I was on a date with, because you feel so vulnerable.
Yeah.
And silly.
Yeah.
But she handled it with, well, she didn't handle it with grace.
Well,
she took
she
her
didn't.
Pants off.
Yeah, I mean, which.
But it's understandable.
Yeah. If there was ever a time to take your pants off on the first date, it was that. So this next story is shared by Janet Gilbert, who actually now runs a storytelling series in South Carolina.
Georgetown, South Carolina.
Yeah, in Georgetown, South Carolina. She is wonderful. As you will see, or you'll hear in this story, she's hilarious and she's so multi-talented. She writes songs, she tells stories, she's a writer. Anything she does is unforgettable. Take a listen.
When I was 18, the summer between my freshman and sophomore year of college, I worked as a banquet waitress at an upscale restaurant in Baldwin, Long Island. Now, to be a banquet waitress, you had to have a certain sort of skill set. You had to have that talent to be able to serve large numbers of people the exact same meal. I was your gal. At one wedding reception I served, there was this just impossibly handsome young guy, mid-20s, wearing a tuxedo, and throughout the wedding reception kept asking me for my name and number, but I had a policy. Even then, I had a policy, and my policy was, you know, you really can't assess a man's character from his behavior at a wedding. I mean, it's sort of an alternate universe where men dance. Also, you know, a tuxedo can make anybody look normal. Now, let's just think of a really, really bad man. And I mean, Elliot Spitzer comes to mind. Maybe you don't think he's bad, but women in my generation, we would like to spank him and charge him 50 grand for the experience. I mean, even, you know, Jeffrey Dahmer probably cuts a fine figure in a tuxedo. My point is, the tuxedo makes everybody look okay. So I rebuffed this guy. You can imagine my surprise when the next day and the next day and the next day, he calls me at home. When I return to work, I find that my boss, the banquet manager, has given him my home number. Isn't that illegal? I think. But apparently, you know, he was just so giddy with excitement that this guy had gone to so much trouble to describe me. I mean, we all wore the exact same uniform. A black polyester dress. I mean, even our hems had to be a certain number of inches from our knee. I think that's illegal. But he said to me, Janet, I knew he was talking about you when he says to me this. He says, I tell you what, she was funny. Great, funny. I never really thought of funny as a physical attribute when I was in my teens. I mean, now clearly it's my best feature. So I guess this guy got some points for persistence in my parents' book because they started to say things like, well, why don't you just go out with him? You might have a nice time. He's very nice. My dad said it might be a story to tell. Foreshadowing! So the next time, you know, he called, I agreed to go out with him. I knew immediately it was just a bad mistake. I mean, persistence, tenacity, boldness, these are the qualities that we find in the captains of industry and CEOs and serial killers. I'm upstairs in the bedroom I share with my younger sister. I'm looking out the window waiting, you know, for the date. And a mail truck pulls into my driveway. It's painted over in like a public pool blue. It's a refurbished mail truck. I say to my sister, I wonder why the mail's coming so late. And she says, it's not the mail, it's your date. He gets out of the truck, you know, and he's in like a shiny disco shirt. He looks like he stepped off the set of Saturday Night Fever. It's open to here. His whole outfit's flammable. And apparently he's wearing some kind of necklace because I hear my dad say, it's a very unusual choker you're wearing. So I go downstairs. I mean, there's no putting this off, and I zero in on the choker, and there's a Coke spoon, cocaine spoon, hanging from the choker. I know it because I paid attention during the drug scare movies they showed in public high school in the 70s. But, you know, I'm nothing if not polite. I say to myself, now, Janet, perhaps you got the wrong impression of this young man due to the drug paraphernalia he's wearing around his neck. So I, you know, I leave my house. My mother says, have a nice time. My dad says, you know, nice meeting you. It's like a scene from The Waltons, only directed by Tim Burton. He takes me to a bar. I'm underage. He leads me to a booth. I get a sick feeling that, you know, he's done this before. He puts one arm around me and one hand on my leg, and the other hand lights a cigarette in the other hand. I mean, he had a lot of hands. I don't know if you're getting this, but, you know, I was the kind of girl, I kind of still am, that, you know, I went to the library. Remember the library? And I would take out, like, my limit of books, I would read them, and I would return them on time. I mean, I knew the words to every Broadway musical of the day. I was like a young Sandy from Greece, and he was like nothing on Broadway. He was like Hannibal Lecter from Silence of the Lambs. And, you know, it was silent. I mean, I don't know if you're getting this from me. I could always make conversation, but I tried. My voice came out in kind of a funny way. I mean, I tried to talk to him. I said, how'd you like those tenderloin tips we serve you? I mean, but, you know, he was not a talker. He was, however, a squeezer. A major, like a squeezer of the Charmin. Are you getting this? I began to be really afraid in the way that only women of my generation could be afraid, where we're sort of paralyzed with this fake smile on our faces. I mean, where was my inner Wanda Sykes saying to me, Jen, look, he's a loser, he came in a mail truck, he's wearing a goat spoon. I'm sitting there, I'm smiling, I'm thinking, how can I extricate myself from this scenario? You know, but at the same time, I tend to sort of look at the bright side of things, you know, and I couldn't help but thinking, you know, my parents actually encouraged me to go on this date. This is ironic. This is kind of funny in a disturbing and dangerous way. I mean, I won't be able to tell my parents, like, a thing about this until now. If only I would have known that I would grow up to be a minor humor columnist in the back page of the regional sections of the Baltimore Sun. I would have known it was just research. So anyway, we're at the bar. I knew I had to get myself out of that booth. So I feigned interest in this arcade game that he said he was the high scorer at. You know, LaDawn is left, but she would tell you, that really does it for most of us women, you know. High score in a arcade game. So he kept ordering drinks, and I kept pouring my drink on the floor. And until I could see that he was really getting kind of unsteady. And then I tapped my watch, and I said, oh, look at the time. I have to work a party tomorrow at 9. And he's like, what kind of wedding reception's at 9? I was like, oh, no, it's not a wedding, it's a bris. No, it just came to me. There is a God. So I drove the mail truck home, as that had been one of my dreams. I escaped his final lunge, and I don't know how he got home. So where's the look on the bright side? I mean, I insist on it in all of my stories. You know, where's the happy ending? Well, would you believe that this Coke spoon-wearing guy is here tonight? He's sitting there with one of our three children.
Stand up! Stand up!
My husband of 27 years. Would you believe that this, you know, Verizon vice president and center stage board member is that guy? No, you would not believe that, because it's ludicrous.
Have you ever done Coke with a Coke spoon?
No, I just, I usually just use my pinky.
Yeah, you just do bumps off of your your hand?
Or my husband's back. Gross. He's probably actually really, really complimented by that and wants people to think that. Anyway.
You heard it here first.
Oh, yeah, for sure. So that's what we got for you today, flat first dates. We hope that if any of you are going on first dates, they are better than this or worse, because then you could have a really good story. Yeah, I don't know if people still go on first dates. In any case, we want to thank Maureen Harvey for producing the podcast. And you can visit us at stoopstorytelling.com to listen to stories, check out our upcoming shows. And we will see you back here soon with more stories from The Stoop.